And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I swore a solemn
my family
years
really
ago,
intense
I was invited to a party.
Totally different. And I come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
Wednesday night on the radio means it's time for stories from Milwaukee's Ex-Fabula. True stories told live, people on stage without a net, no note cards, no nothing, totally extemporaneous. And these are people from your area telling true stories about their lives. And we do this every Wednesday night. And the co-founder of Ex-Fabula, Leah Delaney, comes in with stories past to bring to the air. And I love tonight's theme.
I know you do. It's good. It's tonight. I mean, in lieu of holy cats so much, Packers not going to the Super Bowl and the Deflate Gate, I thought deflated might be a good theme for the night.
What a beautiful, beautiful tie into, unless, you know, you've been hiding somewhere in a remote part of the earth. I mean, the world's attention has been focused on underinflated footballs for too long.
Oh, God, yeah. So, you know, we tried to take that deflate gate and wrap it into a couple of other sort of themes.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, let's
do it. What's up first?
Well, we have a story from a gentleman named Joey Grijalva. He told a story about his brother, his relationship with his brother, and Brett Favre. And I thought, with the Packers and all not going to the Super Bowl, we need to
relive
that.
Will you stop bringing that up?
I know. Can I tell you something really quick before we roll into
absolutely.
Joey's story? All right. So when the news broke about the Patriots and like this deflate gate, I thought for a split second in my very irrational mind, maybe they'll ask the Packers to play now that the Patriots are going to kick out. Like I know enough about football and the Super Bowl, how that works, that would never become a possibility. However, in that moment,
it did cross your mind.
It did. It did. But at any rate, let's listen to Joey Grijalva's deflated story, also under the guise of green, that was told a couple years ago.
Okay.
That's right. I'm wearing a Brett Favre jersey. This man does not get enough respect in this state, considering all the joy and magic he brought to the green and gold. Now, if the question is, did Brett Favre send a picture of his junk to a sexy lady in New York City while his wife suffered from cancer, or fake retire twice and then play for one of our most bitter rivals, then the answer is yes, of course, but she was very sexy. But I'm not just here to talk about the greatest quarterback ever, Brett Favre. I'm also here to talk about my little brother, that bastard. Right now, my little brother is probably having lunch on his patio in Melbourne, Australia, in 80-degree weather. He's halfway across the world with a woman, a beautiful British babe, his fiancée. It gets worse. My brother and his fiancée are only in Melbourne for a couple months, and while she was able to find work, he wasn't. So until they leave Melbourne to go to this paradise island where they're going to be married, he gets to play house husband. Now, I don't know if anyone here is familiar with the life of a house husband. I'm talking about the version without kids. I'm familiar with that life. I've tasted greatness. I know what it's like to be able to read a book after breakfast, have a snack, smoke a bowl, maybe do the dishes, listen to a Brewers game on the radio, eventually prepare a meal and offer a foot rub. I was once that man with a girl I loved, but that time has passed. My brother, he doesn't appreciate his situation, which makes my envy that much more green. But this isn't the first time I've been insanely jealous of my little brother. The one that really sticks out happened in 1997. It was right after the Packers won the Super Bowl. It was at the Bradley Center in downtown Milwaukee. And with all due respect to the Milwaukee Wave Indoor Soccer Club, let's be honest, the main reason that 19,000 people showed up at the Bradley Center that night was to see Brett Favre at halftime. Now, we knew going into the game that that 15 people were going to be randomly selected from the crowd to get a chance to catch an official NFL ball thrown by Brett Favre, signed by Brett Favre. I was 11 years old at the time, and I was wearing this jersey. My 8-year-old brother was wearing an oversized Packers sweatshirt. I think it was my dad's. It was a very cute move on his part. Shh. Shortly after the soccer match started, a woman with a clipboard approached our row, and she asked to have a word with my brother. And I knew at that point it was too late. Even though I had the ticket for the seat that my brother was sitting in, she had called on him. I had just finished my first year of Pee Wee football, so I felt I was ready to make that catch. My brother, on the other hand, he was recovering from appendix surgery, so he wasn't ready. At halftime, before Favre came out, they dropped the lights down, and they played one of those awesome Jock Jam songs that was so popular in the late 90s. And then the flickering of cameras happened, and he emerged like Jesus in a flannel shirt and blue jeans. My brother was one of the last people to go. There were kids who were younger than him, but Favre just walked up to them and tossed him the ball. Teenagers and adults ran patterns. Some were long, some were short. Some people were diving for balls. And a lot of passes were dropped. Some were caught. And by the way, if you caught the ball, you got to keep the ball. And if you dropped it, then you got a little pink Nerf ball signed by Brett Favre instead. So there was a lot of pressure. And my brother was the youngest person to run a pattern. When he approached the two-time MVP, Favre knelt down, and he put his arm around my brother. And he asked him if he was nervous. My brother nodded. Then Favre said, "Don't be nervous, kid." And he told him to run 10 yards and cut in. Now, the ball floated high over my brother's head. It appeared Favre had overthrown him by about 5 yards. But quickly, his little feet sprang into action, and he accelerated to the ball. He turned over his right shoulder, threw up his arms, and caught it in midair. He kept his stride when he touched down on the AstroTurf, and the roar of 19,000 people filled the arena. He circled around back to Favre, gave him a high five. Favre tousled his hair. And then the hottest athlete on the planet raised the roof for my 8-year-old little brother. He was on the front page of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel the next day, and in the front of the sports section of the New York Times. But right now, he's struggling to find the right salad accompaniments to his Australian summer barbecue. And for that, I can hate my brother, and I love my brother forever. Thank you.
And that was Joy Grijalva's story under our theme tonight, which is deflated. Womp womp.
But uplifting was the show Saturday night over that we did, Love, Lust, and Murder.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. That came out really good. And I'll put in a plug that we're going to put it together for radio, and you can hear it on Friday night, February 13th. So bookmark that.
Yeah, the eve before Valentine's Day, a little love, lust, and murder.
Love, lust, and murder on Valentine's Eve.
Did you have any favorite stories? Because that was the night that, and if you missed it, it was at Anodyne, the new one over on Bruce Street in Walker's Point. Panallure, the Milwaukee band, ex-fabulous storytellers, came in and told some stories.
I think, well, I shouldn't give away too much.
You shouldn't, you're right. Do you want to tease?
But there was one story of fessing up to one's sins.
Ah.
That
yes.
just blew me away. So that was a very good story. And we'll have that one as part of the show for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. Really. I was happy that she told that story again,
that was,
too.
It was very, very moving and very revealing and very, I think it hit a lot of people, although, you know, not everyone can say that's happened to them, but you can kind of feel what she was feeling. It was really good.
And on top of all that, it's really great that she's kind of a known personality in Milwaukee. And she spoke to me about it before she originally told the story last year. And she said, you know, I've got two stories for this one theme. One is a really funny one, and one is a really serious, really important story in my life, a real game changer. And I said, well, you know, you can tell a funny story. You can do whatever you feel comfortable with. But she got it together, and she told a really compelling moment in her life. You know, she reached across the boundaries in her life to tell this to complete strangers.
Mm-hmm.
She won that event because it's so true and people can relate to it whether they want to admit it or not.
Yeah.
So then she told that story again.
It was awesome.
So great. So I'm so proud of her.
That's going to tie in well. We'll have the stories and the music on Friday night, February 13th. So
yeah.
I just got to put it all together now.
Yeah, we're going to switch some serious gears right now.
All right, here we go. Okay.
So back to deflated. We're going to we're gonna air a story right now from Dylan Bolin. He's going to talk about a moment in his life where he deflated something quite literally.
Well, I want to hear this.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Here's Dylan Bolin telling his deflated story.
Good evening. It's good to be here. Allow me to say right off the bat that I cannot fall asleep on an airplane. And I'm genuinely envious of the people who can. They stow their luggage, they put on their sleep masks, and then they're out before the stewardess can even tell us about the physics of a seatbelt. They're like infants, but I'm not one of them. And I can't sleep not because I'm afraid. To me, flying is still too surreal to be scary. Yeah, I mean, you get on a plane, and in the time it takes you to watch Deck the Halls starring Danny DeVito and Matthew Broderick, and I use the word starring very loosely, by the end of the movie, you're in a completely different climate. That is still fascinating to me, and I guess in that respect, I'm still an infant. But I can't sleep on a plane because of an incident that occurred on a flight from Portland, Oregon to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, to understand this incident, you must first understand that the night before the flight was the final night of the Comedy Sports National Tournament in Portland, Oregon. Imagine, if you will, 300 improv comedians packed into one space. The riffing and constant one-upsmanship was exhausting. Now, add an endless supply of booze. Now, an endless supply of booze is bad enough, but in the hands of improv comedians, the debauchery takes on a certain desperation and urgency. Well, it was after an evening like this that I needed to fly from Portland to Milwaukee. So I arrived at the airport, and I took my seat. It was the middle seat in a row of three. And to my left and my right were two businessmen. Now, I remember hoping to myself that these two businessmen looked at me and thought, what a rock star. But I'm sure I just smelled like the carpet under a cat box. Now, there's nothing comfortable about flying, especially when you're in the middle seat. But anything padded and seating at that point, to me, was like mother's womb. Right after liftoff, I started to feel myself drift off. I felt my mind expand as sleep descended. I felt my body relax. I felt my muscles loosen. And I farted. And it wasn't one of those demure little farts, one of those little... This was a full-on beer-soaked sigh from my lower GI. It sounded like someone blew a mouthful of pudding through a harmonica. It sounded like Tom Waits gargling. My mind screamed at my consciousness, and I immediately woke up. Did I actually fart? Or did I dream it? But then it became abundantly obvious that I had. The gentleman to my left pretended to look thoughtful as he put his mouth and nose underneath his hand and peered pensively out the small window. But the man to my right didn't move. He just sat there, frozen, his eyes wide and averted. It was as if the proper reaction to such an event was so beyond his realm of imagination that his mind had just short-circuited. But then he did something so very brilliant. Slowly and casually, he leafed through the magazine that he was reading until he got to the thick cologne ad page. He then delicately peeled up the flap and moved the magazine inches from his face, pretending to read the entire time. Brilliant. This was brilliant. This man is my hero. I don't know him, but I will always remember him. And hopefully when he speaks of me, he speaks equally well, although I doubt it. But to this day, ladies and gentlemen, I still cannot fall asleep on a plane. Thank you. That's me.
And that was Dylan Bolin deflating something entirely different.
Well, you know, it happens to everybody.
Speak for
Maybe
yourself.
Maybe not quite that publicly, but...
Well, we want to invite everybody to tell their personal experiences 5 minutes or less. We time you. We have an event coming up in February. It is going to be under the theme of degrees of separation. So we would love Milwaukee to show up with a real, true personal story under the time limit of 5 minutes. Come throw your name in the hat and see what happens.
Yeah. No, that's a subject that is wide open to interpretation, degrees of separation. So and two successful events in the past week. You guys are rolling now. So
yeah, it's been a really busy January. Yeah. We're going to keep it busy.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you for bringing stories tonight, and we look forward to the February event. And also February 13th, we'll have Love, Lust, and Murder on the radio.
You want more details? You can go to exfabula.com.
And you can become a member there as well.
Indeed, you can.
Thank you, Leah.
Thanks a lot, Bruce.
All right.